Okay, let's unpack this. Have you ever looked at the global news, seen headlines about, trade wars, aid packages, or countries struggling with debt, and just wondered, how on earth do all these vastly different nations with their unique economic journeys, truly connect and influence each other on the world stage?
Yeah, it's not just simple transactions, is it? What's truly incredible, I think, is how it all intertwines. We're talking about this massive, interconnected web of relationships. Everything from countries helping each other out to global trade to these incredibly complex financial structures. Today, we're diving into a really rich collection of sources that lay out these intricate dynamics quite well.
So our mission today is basically to cut through some of that noise, give you a real shortcut to understanding these crucial global interactions. We want to spark those aha moments,
That's
those
awesome.
moments about how the world economy really works. We'll explore the fascinating, sometimes pretty fraught world of international aid. The immense power of global trade and foreign investment.
Huge topics.
Yeah, the widespread impact of multinational companies, and even delve into that heavy burden of external debt. And of course, we can't forget the big players sort of keeping the gears turning, like the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank.
Precisely. We'll peel back the layers on each of these. We'll look at their definitions, what they actually do, and crucially, their real-world consequences.
Okay.
Our goal is to bring you clear insights into how these mechanisms either propel or, well, sometimes hinder economic development. And we'll focus on critical aspects like long-term sustainability, potential dependency, and that ever-present question of global equity. So what does this all mean for the big picture?
Right, the big picture. Let's start maybe with something people often think of first. International aid.
Good place to start.
It's that flow of resources, money, expertise, even food from wealthier nations or big international bodies, usually aimed at helping developing countries. But while the intention often seems noble, its impact, that can be
Rare.
incredibly complex, right?
Absolutely. Aid at its core. Yeah, it's a voluntary transfer. Financial, technical, material. Usually from developed countries or international agencies to developing nations. The main goals are always, support development, reduce poverty, and assist in emergencies. Now, these transfers, they come in various forms. You've got bilateral aid that's directly from one government to another, like the UK providing funds to Kenya, direct handshake sort of thing.
Okay, one to one.
Then there's multilateral aid. Here, money is pooled and channeled through international organizations. Think World Bank, IMF, UN agencies. It's like a global collection pot. Then there's a form that often sparks debate. Tied aid. This is where the donor gives money. But the catch is the recipient has to buy goods and services from that donor country.
Ah, I see. So it helps the donor's economy too.
Exactly. Could
Well.
be a win for the donor's industries, but it might mean higher costs or maybe less suitable solutions for the recipient country. Beyond that, we see emergency aid. That's the rapid short-term relief after disasters or conflicts, food, medicine, shelter, the immediate needs.
Makes sense.
And finally, development aid. This is more strategic, long-term investment, building things like education systems, infrastructure, healthcare, strengthening institutions.
It's easy to assume aid is purely about generosity, just helping out. But I imagine there are often other motivations, maybe less obvious ones, for donor countries. Why do nations actually give aid?
You hit on a crucial point there. While humanitarian motives reducing suffering are certainly powerful, there are often layers. Political and strategic interests definitely come into play.
How so?
Well, aid can strengthen diplomatic ties or increase a country's global influence. It's a kind of soft power tool. Economic interests are also a factor. Aid can potentially expand trade and investment markets for the donor down the line. And we can't ignore historical ties. Former colonies, for instance, often receive aid from their former colonizers. It's a lingering legacy. Ultimately, though, it also ties into global stability. Yeah, the thinking is that reducing poverty and inequality can decrease the chances of global conflict, mass migration, things that affect everyone in the long run.
So it sounds like aid is really a double-edged sword. It brings immense benefits, but also significant risks. Yet you're saying it's still vital. Why is it still so indispensable?
It is, yeah, it's definitely a mixed bag. On the plus side, aid can significantly boost vital infrastructure, human capital through education and health, and bring in technology and knowledge, all things that help achieve those UN Sustainable Development Goals.
Right, the SDGs.
But the flip side, well, it can sometimes create a dependency trap, making countries reliant rather than self-sufficient. There's always the risk of corruption, funds getting diverted.
Yeah, you hear about that.
And like we said, tide aid might benefit the donor more. It can even distort local markets. Imagine free food aid undercutting local farmers. That's not helping in the long run.
Despite these complexities, though, aid remains incredibly important. In many developing countries, it forms a really significant chunk of government budgets, doesn't it?
A huge chunk sometimes. It enables investment where domestic savings are just too low. It fosters global partnerships, goodwill. And for immediate disaster relief and those long-term development goals, it's often absolutely essential.
Okay, so aid is one piece. What about the global marketplace itself? Trade and investment.
Right. So if aid is one thread, then trade and investment. That's another huge one, maybe even bigger. Trade fundamentally allows countries to specialize, comparative advantage. Do what you do best.
Which should make everything more efficient globally.
Exactly. It increases global efficiency, overall production, and investment, especially from developed countries, brings that much needed capital, management know-how, and vital access to global markets.
That makes perfect sense on paper. But what about in practice, especially for developing countries trying to compete? What are the hurdles they face in trade?
Oh, they face quite a few. Developing countries often run into significant tariff and non-tariff barriers trying to sell goods to developed nations. Walls, basically.
Protectionism.
Yeah. Many are heavily reliant on primary commodities, raw materials, agriculture, and those prices. Notoriously volatile. A bad harvest, a shift in global demand. It can destabilize an entire economy almost overnight.
Wow.
They can also face unfavorable terms of trade. Think of it like this. The price they get for their coffee beans doesn't keep pace with the rising price they pay for imported machinery.
So they're always playing catch up.
Pretty much. Like running just to stay in the same place.
Yeah.
And often a lack of infrastructure and technology holds them back, reducing their competitiveness.
So while opening up markets, trade liberalization is often pushed for growth, it also means these maybe fragile domestic industries are suddenly exposed to intense global competition. That can't be easy.
Not at all. It requires careful management.
When we talk about these immense forces shaping global economies, my mind immediately jumps to multinational companies, MNCs.
Ah, yes, the big players.
These massive firms operating everywhere, headquarters usually in a developed economy, operations often in developing ones. We see their brands constantly, but what do they actually do on the ground in those local economies?
They're incredibly active. MNCs typically open factories, branches of physical presence. They run these incredibly complex global supply chains, outsourcing different parts of production.
Right.
Critically, they invest in local infrastructure, create jobs, which can be a huge boost.
Yeah.
And a key aspect, maybe often underestimated, is the transfer of knowledge, technology, and those sophisticated managerial skills. Invaluable assets.
So what's the real world impact then? The consequences of having these giants operating in your country sounds like significant upsides, but I'm guessing some serious downsides too.
Absolutely. The picture is often quite nuanced, rarely black and white. On the positive side, yes, job creation, training, that's undeniable. They generate tax revenue for host governments, which can be reinvested.
Yeah.
Can be, yes. You often see improvements in infrastructure, greater access to international markets for local goods, and that technology and skill transfer we mentioned.
Okay, the good side, but the flip side.
Well, there's a clear flip side. MNCs can contribute to environmental degradation if regulations are weak or unenforced. There's the issue of repatriation of profits. The money earned often flows back to the parent country, not necessarily staying to benefit the host economy long term.
Right. It doesn't always trickle down.
And there's a real risk of exploitation, cheap labor, weak regulations leading to poor working conditions, plus, more subtly perhaps, cultural homogenization, loss of local identity, and even political influence. Their economic power can sometimes allow them to sway host country policies.
So massive stimulus potentially, but also worries about exploitation, environment, profits leaving. It sounds like a constant balancing act for host countries.
It really is.
And speaking of foreign capital flows, that brings us neatly to foreign direct investment, FDI. What exactly is that compared to just, say, buying stocks?
Good distinction. FDI is specifically a long-term investment. It's a firm or individual in one country putting money directly into business assets in another country. It's not just portfolio investment. It's about gaining a lasting management interest.
How does that usually happen?
Typically by acquiring existing assets, buying a local factory, for example, or establishing brand new operations, like building a new plant or opening offices from scratch.
And the consequences of this type of investment, equally profound, I imagine, good and bad.
Very much so. The upsides are substantial. You get that vital inflow of foreign capital, kickstarting projects, job creation, often better training, maybe better wages.
Okay.
It can lead to improved technology, productivity boosts across sectors, better access to export markets.
Yeah.
Plus, it can enhance competition domestically, which might be good for consumers.
The downsides.
The downsides are also real. FDI can potentially crowd out local firms. Imagine a huge, well-funded foreign company coming in and simply outcompeting smaller local businesses.
Making it hard for them to survive.
Exactly. This can lead to economic, even political, dependency on that foreign investor. There's also the possibility of exploiting local resources, profit repatriation, limiting the benefits, and those environmental and social concerns if not managed properly.
So again, while FDI is clearly a key source of capital for development, its success really hinges on effective regulation and smart policies by the host government itself. It's not some kind of magic wand.
Definitely not a silver bullet, no. Needs careful handling.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit. Let's talk about external debt. This can become such a crushing burden for nations. It often feels like a trap they can't escape. What typically drives countries into accumulating this kind of massive debt in the first place?
It's often a combination of things, unfortunately. Sometimes it's just overborrowing by governments, maybe for big infrastructure projects or development plans that don't generate the expected returns.
Okay.
A common issue is a persistent dependence on imports without enough exports to earn the foreign currency needed to pay for them. Mm-hmm. And the interest. The interest on previous loans just keeps accumulating relentlessly.
Compounded.
Exactly. Currency devaluation can also wreak havoc. If you borrowed in dollars and your local currency tanks, suddenly that debt is much bigger in local terms. Poor planning, weak governance can make things worse. And, of course, unexpected shocks, natural disasters, conflicts often force countries to borrow heavily just for emergency funding.
Digging the hole deeper.
Precisely.
And once a country is in that debt trap, what are the real consequences? The things that ripple through society.
Oh, the consequences are profound, often heartbreaking. First, there's debt servicing. Countries have to divert huge chunks of their budget just to pay interest and principal. Money that should be going to health, education, basic services.
It gets diverted.
Yeah. This can also lead to reduced sovereignty. Debtor nations might find themselves pressured to follow really strict conditions imposed by lenders, like the IMF or World Bank, maybe compromising their own policy choices.
Yeah.
There's also the constant risk of default. If debt becomes unsustainable, they might lose their credit rating, making it impossible to borrow more, triggering economic crises. And the social impact? That could be devastating.
How so?
Think austerity measures. Cutting subsidies on food or fuel, hiking taxes on everyday goods, often demanded as part of loan conditions. It's usually the poorest people who bear the brunt, yeah. Caught in a cycle they didn't create.
It's a truly tough situation. And sometimes the only way out seems to be through debt relief or restructuring, often provided by those very institutions we should probably talk about next, the IMF and the World Bank, or initiatives like HIPC.
That's right. The Heavily Indebted Poor Countries Initiative, HIPC, was one such effort. And yes, that brings us perfectly to these big global institutions.
Let's start with the International Monetary Fund, the IMF. Lots of people hear the name, but aren't quite sure what it actually does. I sometimes think of it as the world's sort of financial firefighter. Is that fair?
That's actually a pretty good analogy. The IMF is a global financial institution. Yeah. Primarily focused on providing short-term financial support. Specifically to countries facing balance of payments problems.
Balance of payments.
Basically, if a country is consistently importing way more than it's exporting or struggling to pay back foreign loans, it can literally run out of the foreign currency it needs. Dollars, euros, etc. The IMF provides that crucial short-term lifeline to stop things spiraling into a full-blown crisis.
Okay, so emergency loans.
Emergency loans, yes. But they also offer valuable technical advice and training on economic management, monetary policy, that kind of thing.
So beyond just lending money, what are their other key functions then?
Well, crucial surveillance of global financial stability, keeping an eye on the world economy's health. Lending to countries in crisis, as we said, but almost always with conditions attached. They want the country to take steps to fix the underlying problem.
The infamous conditions.
Indeed. And advising on economic reforms, macroeconomic policy, taxation, exchange rates, the whole toolkit.
But the IMF faces huge criticisms, doesn't it? especially over those conditions, the structural adjustment programs, SAPs. These often require deep cuts to government spending, privatization, opening up trade. What's the main criticism there?
Critics argue, quite strongly, that these measures, while maybe designed for stability on paper, can disproportionately hurt the most vulnerable people, reducing spending on health, education.
Social safety nets.
Exactly. They can lead to unemployment if state companies are privatized quickly and potentially greater inequality because of these rapid, sometimes harsh economic shifts.
Yet they have staunch supporters too. What's the argument for the IMF's role?
Supporters would argue that the IMF brings much-needed discipline and forces essential, if painful, reforms onto economies that are genuinely in crisis. They'd say that without these tough measures, many countries would just spiral deeper into instability.
So they see it as necessary medicine.
That's the argument. That the IMF ultimately helps restore economic stability, which should benefit everyone in the long run.
Okay. Now, from the IMF, let's transition to its sibling institution, the World Bank. Often mentioned together, but their focus is quite different, isn't it?
It absolutely is. If the IMF is the firefighter for crises, the World Bank is more like the long-term architect for development. Its focus is different.
How so?
It provides long-term loans and, importantly, grants specifically to support development projects. The emphasis is strongly on poverty reduction, broader economic development, and building that foundational infrastructure.
So what kinds of projects are we talking about? What do they actually fund and what else do they do?
Their key functions are really extensive. They fund projects in crucial sectors like education, health, agriculture, transport, water, energy,
mm-hmm.
You know, the basic building blocks of a functioning economy and society.
Right.
They also do a huge amount of research and data collection, offering really valuable insights into development challenges worldwide. Beyond funding, they provide technical assistance, policy advice, and increasingly, they're supporting climate resilience and sustainable development initiatives, recognizing those long-term threats.
But like the IMF, the World Bank also has its critics, right? What are the main concerns there?
Yes, it does. Some critics argue that its focus on very large-scale projects, big dams, major roads, can sometimes displace communities or have negative environmental or social impacts that weren't fully foreseen.
Okay.
And of course, their loans, while concessional sometimes, do add to a country's debt burden, which we've just discussed, is a massive challenge. And there are concerns that perhaps historically, it might have prioritized raw economic growth over things like equity or long-term environmental sustainability.
Yet its supporters would point to some undeniable successes, wouldn't they?
Exactly. Supporters highlight that the World Bank has played a really significant role in lifting millions out of poverty. It's funded essential development infrastructure across the globe, schools, clinics, power plants, leading to tangible improvements in living standards for many people.
It's complex.
Very complex.
Yeah.
#, outro. So if we try and connect all these different threads we've discussed, the aid, the trade, the MNCs, FDI, debt, the big institutions, it becomes really clear that the relationship between countries at different stages of development is this constantly evolving, incredibly intricate tapestry.
Yeah, woven from all these different forces.
Exactly, woven from international aid, those huge flows in trade, the actions of multinationals, foreign direct investment, and the oversight, controversial or not, of institutions like the IMF and World Bank.
So what does this all mean for you, our listener, as you look at the news or just think about the global economy? I guess it's about understanding that these interactions, while they offer immense potential benefits, capital, technology, market access.
Huge benefits.
They also come with inherent challenges. We've seen the potential for dependency, for exploitation, and often, sadly, for making existing inequalities even worse.
Which really raises an important question for all of us, doesn't it? In a world where these powerful forces are constantly at play, how can we possibly ensure that global economic interactions genuinely contribute to sustainable development for everyone? How do we stop them just widening the gaps?
Yeah.
What kinds of effective policies, regulations, international cooperation, what do you think is most crucial to achieve that really delicate balance?
That's a powerful thought to carry with you, isn't it? How do we steer this massive, complex ship towards a more equitable and sustainable future for all? Lots to think about.